All right, so what inspired you to get into this field and major in electrical engineering? Like, why did you do
that? Well, I knew I was good at math, and I knew that engineering would be a good place for me. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like electrical engineering used more math than anything else.
Okay.
But what really got me on the path that I'm going on mm-hmm. is that as a senior, I was graduating, mm-hmm. and I was going off to seminary to study to be a pastor.
Oh, really?
And all the other engineers were getting these big dollar jobs, mm-hmm. and I was looking at summer job at McDonald's or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And right before finals, somebody passed around a piece of paper saying mm-hmm. internship at GE Space Division. Mm-hmm. So I put on my only ugly brown pinstripe suit, and I had my hair going down to here, mm-hmm. and I went for the job interview, mm-hmm. and a couple days later they called me back and said I had the job.
Ooh.
And that summer I did microprocessor programming, mm-hmm. when microprocessors were brand new.
Wow.
at the Goddard Space Flight Center for NASA, for the GE Space Division.
Okay.
So after that, this is actually a strategic thing in the engineering world and probably a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. Once you have a certain amount of experience in some area, mm-hmm. that's the only thing people want to hire you for.
Really?
They don't. So
really?
your first job out of college is like your most important mm-hmm. one. And it's not about getting the most money, it's about getting in a position where mm-hmm. you can do something useful mm-hmm. and where people really want what you can do for the long term.
Mm. Okay.
You're going to have to edit this down pretty heavily, aren't you?
A little bit.
You want me to keep it short? You want me to tell you the stories?
No, it's okay. Keep it as long as you want.
Okay.
I have a word count that I need to reach, so.
Okay.
So, was there anything you were interested in or thought you would do instead of electrical engineering?
Well, yeah. I thought I was going to be a pastor.
And that was like your main goal?
Well, I just really wanted to serve the Lord, mm-hmm. and I thought the best way to serve the Lord was to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. And then after one semester at seminary, I kind of figured out that you have to use the gifts you've been given, mm-hmm. rather than, and I was not gifted for being a pastor.
Yeah.
You can just tell the way that I talk that I'm not a naturally gifted speaker, right?
You're doing fine. Okay. All right.
Let me tell you my career goal.
Okay.
And in general, when you're working on a resume, having mm-hmm. looked at thousands of them, mm-hmm. the way I think people should start a resume is by mm-hmm. putting career objective. Mm-hmm. And usually what you do is you put in whatever you think they want to hear mm-hmm. so that they think, wow, this person wants exactly what I want. Mm-hmm. But my career objective has been to be a part of networking solutions mm-hmm. that wouldn't exist if I weren't involved.
Okay.
So it's not enough just to be part of making useful networking solutions. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be something where I do something creative or something that makes it happen mm-hmm. where it wouldn't happen otherwise.
Okay.
And so that's what I've been doing for a long time.
Okay. All right. So the tech world has developed rapidly over the last 20 years. And it's easier, I think, now than it was previously to get into like the tech industry. So how did you start working at like what is now Hughes Networking Systems?
Well, there was this gal at church who said this little company named Digital Communications Corporation had the, she was a receptionist at this company. She said they had the best engineers. And so I was interviewing multiple places as I was graduating with my master's degree and had more than one offer. But I picked this place partly because she said they had the best engineers and I wanted to learn from the best. And because they had the best, most well-organized interview process. Where each person had like a specific role they were supposed to perform. Where the first couple people gave me a technical grilling and the last person gave me a pitch for why I should want to work for their company. And I thought that if they were well organized at doing interviewing, they probably were a pretty good company. And I've been there ever since.
Wow. Okay, so that brings us to the next question. With your qualifications and experience, you probably have the choice at to work at any tech or engineering company. So why did you choose to stay with them for this long?
Well, that's a good question. But when you're with when you're young in your career, you want to work for a rapidly growing organization. Okay. And they were growing 35-40% a year, year after year. Because when you're with a rapidly growing organization, your role and your promotions and everything grow with the company. So I just stuck with it because it was growing rapidly like that. And then finally I was like a vice president and I was kind of settled down and I just stuck with it. So that kind of explains it. I toyed a little bit with moving out to the West Coast to be a game developer back around 1980.
That's exciting.
Didn't do that. And I should have done startups two or three times because basic areas of technology that I was the first in the world to work on ended up being billion-dollar companies.
I was looking into that. I was like,
if I had actually gone the startup route, there's a good chance I'd be, you know, a multi millionaire. But, I mean, money is not an issue. But that would have been fun to build something like that from scratch.
So what do you do on a daily basis as vice president?
Well, I'm kind of a unique guy. Most vice presidents have organizations with like 50 people working for them. But I'm an individual contributor. So most of what I do on a daily basis is write documents, describing things that or doing PowerPoint presentations, recommending things that can be done, and reviewing the work of more junior engineers. So. And mentoring more junior engineers. Actually, I've gotten to the point where I've grown like three guys up from straight out of college to where they don't need me anymore.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so you created three satellite systems. That total sales are $10+ billion, right? And are projected to service 100,000 homes over the next year. So why and how did you start these projects?
Okay, well, the first one I was a software architect for, and it was brand new, and it built the company, and I got picked for that because I was the hot lick young engineer. And actually, there was another project building a similar system for the Federal Express Company, which was a really big company back then. It's still pretty big, you know, FedEx, does packages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked on that project, and we, our first customer was Walmart, when mm-hmm. Walmart was little.
Mm-hmm.
And that was magnificently successful, and I just stuck with that. That's the mm-hmm. one where basically every gas station in America,
mm-hmm.
most retail outlets, most hotels, all had a satellite system on their roof. And the basic idea of the business was, in order to do a credit card verification,
mm-hmm.
before that, you had to make a long distance phone call. Now, you don't know what a long distance phone call is, but it used to be you had to pay for every phone call, like dollars, in order to make a long distance phone call. And of course, in order to get the credit card to mm-hmm. work, it took like a minute to set up the mm-hmm. phone call and get the connection and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative to having our satellite system
mm-hmm.
was to have a permanent 24 hours a day, always connected long distance telephone line.
Mm-hmm.
They called that a leased line.
Mm-hmm.
And so the satellite system, which cost, I don't know, $300 or $400 a month,
mm-hmm.
was much, much cheaper than that.
Mm-hmm.
And it enabled these businesses to do all their networking, but mm-hmm. most importantly, these credit card verifications
mm-hmm.
quickly and inexpensively.
Okay.
So for that one, I was just the, engineer who was bringing all the software together to make mm-hmm. it work together as a system.
Okay.
And that actually built the company.
Okay.
The company's name is Hughes Network Systems.
Mm.
And Hughes is named after the famous Howard Hughes. Mm-hmm. There's a good story about his life too. You'd sort of like to be Howard Hughes.
Okay. let's see. So you said you were a product champion for one of these roles. What specifically does that mean? Like, what did you do?
Well, that means I was the guy who was saying, this is a good idea, and we should do this. And talking to all the different groups in the company and pulling them all together and coming up with the plan for this entirely new kind of product. And that was called Direct PC with no T. DirecPC.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 90s, personal computers were like the coolest thing. And so you probably heard of DirecTV, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was a satellite communication solution for mm-hmm. individual PCs before they had Wi-Fi networks.
Oh.
Okay. You would put a plug-in card into your PC and it would receive things off the internet via satellite at high speed. And it would send requests into the internet
mm-hmm.
via dial-up modem, which was slow speed. And this was in like the mid-90s when America Online was the thing and the internet was taking over from America Online.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended up being the first
mm-hmm.
nationwide broadband internet service. The first nationwide broadband residential internet service. Residential means just going to regular people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. All right, well, you kind of answered this question, but it was, how did you and your work contribute to the rapid expansion, like, of the company?
Well, I was the software architect of the product that built the company. And then I was the product champion for the next wave of products that continued to grow the company. Mm-hmm. Right now there's like 1.5 million satellite, residential satellite internet users of the HughesNet service. Mm-hmm. Okay. So at one point I had a team of 40 engineers working for me. And you know, it really wasn't all that much fun. My job pretty much consisted of going to meetings and looking at lists of problems and deciding which ones were important enough to work on.
Okay.
I didn't get to decide who worked on them. I didn't get to decide, I didn't get to actually fix anything myself. It was just going to these endless meetings. It was not much fun. So I changed my career to be an individual contributor.
Okay. All right. So, do you think it's important to bring internet service to unserved homes and unserved areas?
Well, obviously, and that's... you know, that's the wonderful thing about my career is that I've actually done something that has actually helped, you know, more than 1 million families. That's a pretty wonderful thing to be able to say you've done with your life. And I have one son that's working for the military-industrial complex. And I've encouraged him without any success to consider doing something that would be more useful for humanity than that. But you know, it's nice when it's a small thing. I mean, compared to like going in there and helping somebody beat their drug problem, or or you know, be a open heart surgeon and save someone's life. It's a small thing. But the nice thing about being an engineer is that you get to make things better. In general, what engineers do is they make things better. They may be small things, but they make them better. And then there's a multiplier on it, right? If you engineer something, you can have 1 million multiplier. So maybe all you did was let people who otherwise couldn't have internet, a small thing. But when you multiply that by 1 million, it's something you can feel good about.
So what do you hope for the, like for the future of networking systems? Like what would you like to see in the future?
For my particular company or for just networking in
general? Just in general.
You know, I would really like the I would really like the internet to fulfill some of its original goals of providing ubiquitous communication, like endpoint to endpoint, as opposed to hierarchical top-down communications. And I would like it to be free and open and transparent, without canceling and without censorship. That's what I'd like, and I may retire sometime in the next year or two and find some open source projects to contribute to in my early retirement time in the area of privacy and those kind of open, transparent communications areas.
Okay. So how has like the networking systems field changed since you started, just in general, like how have things changed?
Well, it's completely changed in that, as I said before, and if you go through the stages, you had slow long distance telephone lines that would run at like 10 kilobits per second and they would be point to point. They would connect one building to another building, right? and they would cost $1,000 a month. And now you have a, I don't know, $40, $50 a month connection to the internet that runs at maybe 50 megabits per second. That would be that'd be 5,000 times faster if I'm doing the math right in my head. 5,000 times faster, and you can talk to anybody anywhere in the world or any website anywhere in the world. So the move to digital has been huge, and the move to the internet has been huge. And another thing that's happened that's like really quite amazing and one of the unexpected things is the open source movement. You may not be familiar with that, but open source is where in the old days you used to have a computer program and the company would own it, and it would be secret and they wouldn't share it with anybody. But in the open source world, you publish your software. And you allow other people to build on it. And this was like an unexpected thing that sort of happened organically. And now by far the most important pieces of software in the world, at least the most, most important fundamental pieces of software in the world, operating systems with networking stacks, browsers, lots of things are open source where anybody can download it and improve it and start using it. You can think about it as the computer programming equivalent of Wikipedia, right? Where Wikipedia is this big encyclopedia where anybody can add new articles or edit old articles. Of course, they have editors to keep people from like damaging articles or vandalizing articles. But there are these big open source projects that work like that. So for example, if you're an Android phone person, like 95% of the Android phone is open source. And Google, and Google just does the final 5%, which gives them control over all sorts of things, which we'd like to change.
So what are some things, this is getting away from like the, you know, your professional life, what are some things that are important to you, like as a person? Just some things that like,
well, the most important thing that ever happened in my life was the night I found out my parents were getting a divorce. I'd been a pretty much an unhappy kid. Didn't believe in God or anything. And I found out and I was just all shook up. I called my girlfriend and she came over with another guy. So I told her to get lost. I went downstairs to my brother and his older friends, and they said, here, smoke this. And I knew that wasn't the answer. And my best friend was all shook up and freaked out. He just kind of walked away. And I didn't know what to do, and I ran down the block, and I fell on the ground. I said, God, if you're real, Jesus, if you're real, help me. And at that point, I felt this overwhelming love come over me, and I knew things would be all right. And even though before I had no idea whether God was real or anything, I'd known that that Jesus was real, and that he really did rise from the dead, and he really did love me. And that like completely changed my whole way of looking at things. You know, before that, I used to walk down the, be walking through the grocery store and I'd see some, I was like 16 when this happened, I'd see some old housewife pulling out TV dinners from the frozen food section. And I'd go, look at that person, she's completely ridiculous, she doesn't know what's going on. And now I'd walk down the aisle and I'd see the same thing. I'd say, look at that person. She looks ridiculous. She doesn't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of like her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a huge change. And it like completely changed my attitude towards work. Like my father used chores as punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though he was kind of a type A workaholic kind of guy, he taught all of his children to think work was punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, you know, that Jesus was a servant.
Mm-hmm.
He said, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many.
Mm-hmm.
And doing work and being a servant and doing something useful and helpful is actually something great that you want to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, you know, those kind of things about actually loving other people mm-hmm. and actually wanting to do something useful completely changed my life.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how much of that you can use in your school newspaper, but no, in your school paper, but that's, that for me was the single most important thing that happened.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that is all my questions. Thank you so much for doing this, Harry.
Okay.